हरि ओम सहना अवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
We are still in the introduction to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. The subject matter of the Chaitanya Charitamrita primarily deals with what is beyond this material creation. The cosmic material expansion is called Maya, illusion, because it has no eternal existence, right? So illusion means that it doesn't have an eternal existence. That's the illusory aspect. It exists, but it's called illusion because of the temporariness. Right, so it's not like the Maya body say it's illusion because it's not there at all. No, it's there. It's just that it's temporary. So for the living entity, there's nothing of actual real value. So to put one's attention into it as valuable, that's the illusion. So it won't give you. Yes.
So can we say that's the only illusion that exists? For the living entity to think that they're separate from God, everything else is real? Just temporary?
Yeah, it means everything else. It means it, whatever we see here, it all exists. But the what value we attribute to it that's not connected to Krishna, that's an illusion. Because we're thinking that the thing itself has a value but on its own. But the point is that Krishna's potency within it is what gives it the value. But we're not attributing that, so that's what's the illusion. The illusion is this, we're thinking that it's the external form that's causing our attraction, but it's actually Krishna. So.
But this illusion is our attachment to this wrong concept. That it has some value.
And what do you mean by wrong concept?
The real thing that is Krishna. Krishna's potency acting, but we think it is separate from God.
Yes.
It's our attachment that's the problem.
Yes.
Not the thing in itself.
Yes. Because it is sometimes manifested and sometimes not, it is regarded as illusory. But beyond this temporary manifestation is a higher nature, as indicated in the Bhagavad Gita 8:20. Parastasmat tu bhavo nyo vyakto vyaktat sanatana yasa sarveshu bhuteshu nasyastu na vinashyati. Yet there is another unmanifested nature which is eternal and is transcendental to this manifested and unmanifested matter. It is supreme and is never annihilated. When all in this world is annihilated, that part remains as it is. End quote. The material world has a manifested state, vyakta, and a potential unmanifested state, avyakta. The supreme nature is beyond both the manifested and unmanifested material nature. This superior nature can be understood as the living force, which is present in the bodies of all living creatures. The body itself is composed of inferior nature, matter, but it is the superior nature that is moving the body. The symptom of that superior nature is consciousness. Thus, in the spiritual world, where everything is composed of the superior nature, everything is conscious. Right? So, we're conscious as the jiva, but the body's not. So, as Krishna's potency is the life force that makes it appear to be conscious. And move and everything like that. We're not doing that. Right? Mm-hmm. It's that Krishna's potency. He's doing that. He's giving that life force. So he is that ultimate life force, right? The Chaitanya, as Prabhupada was saying earlier. In the material world, there are inanimate objects that are not conscious. But in the spiritual world, nothing is inanimate. There, a table is conscious. The land is conscious. The trees are conscious. Everything is conscious. So that's the aspect, is they're all conscious of Krishna. And so if we're not, neither will be happy there, nor will whoever, all the other conscious entities there, they will not be happy. That's why we come here, where things aren't conscious, and then we can be not conscious, and then, you know, everybody gets along. It is not possible to imagine how far this material manifestation extends. In the material world, everything is calculated by imagination or by some imperfect method. Right? It's just imagined, right? So like I think the meter, they took the circumference of the earth as they understand it and then divided it by something and then you got the meter. You know, and then the foot, you know, whose foot that is, I have no idea. But, you know, he's not your standard guy. You know, so how they come up with these things, they're just imagined. We put something's big, we say it's big, but someone else says it's small. I mean, you know, for those who are, you know, been staying in Mayapur for a long time, before the samadhi looked big, right? The lotus building looked big, like that. But after they started, they, you know, did the superstructure on the big temple. Nothing looks big. They were up there for the, you know, the Kalash, the Abhishek and all that. And I remember being up there when they first were doing it. It's like, wow, it just keeps going up and it's so big. And now I'm saying, that's it? You know, so it's just, that's the thing. It's all within the mind. But the Vedic literatures give real information of what lies beyond the material universe. Since it is not possible to obtain information of anything beyond this material nature by experimental means, those who believe only in experimental knowledge may doubt the Vedic conclusions. For such people cannot even calculate how far this universe extends. You know, they say it's this or that. They say that there's unlimited universes within what they're looking at. We know it's just one universe, and this is the smallest universe. So they have no idea. Right? Nor can they reach far into the universe itself. That which is beyond our power of conception is called achintya, inconceivable. It is useless to argue or speculate about the inconceivable. If something is truly inconceivable, it is not subject to speculation or experimentation. That's the point. If it's inconceivable, you cannot conceive of it. And so you don't have to apply this elements of logic to it and say, oh, no, but what's the logic? Because it's inconceivable. You won't be able to understand it. Our energy is limited and our sense perception is limited. Therefore, we must rely on the Vedic conclusions regarding that subject matter which is inconceivable. Knowledge of the superior nature must simply be accepted without argument, right? Because it's coming from those who have seen, right? It's expected if you're dealing in the science world that the PhD makes a statement, everybody accepts that, right? But if someone just stood, you know, and they made that point, someone stood up, excuse me, but, you know, we could say that's just your opinion. Right? What would happen?
That would be your last words.
Yes. But the fun part is that it's beyond what, you know, can be conceived of. So those who come from the spiritual world, they know what they're talking about. They're the authorities, right? Because the point is those who are authorities. So they're not authorities. If you're not a quantum physicist, you shouldn't be talking about the universe. That's just the rule. Right? So the thing is, here's people from beyond. They can talk what's beyond. Does that make sense? So it's just that's how the etiquette works. So here's something that's inconceivable because you can't deal with what's beyond material with material senses. They're limited. They can only see within material. How can they see what's beyond that? Right? If I have an infrared sensor, it can only sense infrared. I can't use that to figure out, you know, how many potatoes I should use for lunch. It won't work. You know? So that's the whole thing, is that if you're being logical, then you would say, it's just there, it's inconceivable. Therefore, you listen to those who are beyond. Right? Knowledge of the superior nature must simply be accepted without argument. How is it possible to argue about something to which we have no access? The method for understanding transcendental subject matter is given by Lord Krishna himself in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna tells Arjuna at the beginning of the fourth chapter, Imam vivasvate yogam proktavan aham avyayam vivasvan manave praha manur ikshvakave bhavita. I instructed this imperishable science of yoga to the sun god, Vivasvan, and Vivasvan instructed it to Manu, the father of mankind, and Manu in turn instructed it to Ikshvaku. Bhagavad Gita 4.1. This is the method of parampara, or disciplic succession. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam explains that Krishna imparted knowledge into the heart of Brahma, the first created being within the universe. Brahma imparted those lessons to his disciple Narada, and Narada imparted that knowledge to his disciple Vyas. Vyas imparted it to Madhvacharya, and from Madhvacharya the knowledge came down to Madhavendra Puri, and then to Ishwarapuri, and from him to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One may ask that if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, then why did he need a spiritual master? Of course, he did not need a spiritual master, but because he was playing the role of Acharya, one who teaches by example, he accepted a spiritual master. Even Krishna himself accepted a spiritual master, for that is the system. In this way, the Lord sets the example for men. Right? So Acharya means they do things to set example, what should be done. Does that make sense? So this idea is, no, there he's beyond, he can do whatever he likes. He could, but he doesn't. Just like Krishna can do whatever he likes, but no, he does this. Why? Because this is what he likes to do. We're the ones that don't want to approach authority. Krishna doesn't have a problem with that. Right? Does that make sense? For Krishna, there's no problem of the principle of absolute authority. Right? We're the ones that have that problem. In Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a great deal of information given about the Vaikuntha planetary system, which are beyond the material universe. Similarly, a great deal of inconceivable information is given in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Any attempt to arrive at this information through experimental knowledge will fail. The knowledge simply has to be accepted. According to the Vedic method, Shabda, or transcendental sound, is regarded as evidence. Sound is very important in Vedic understanding, for if it is pure, it is accepted as authoritative. Right? So that's the point. It has to come from proper source. Right? Then it has that potency. So even you try whatever way you will with experimental knowledge, you will not get to that, because you can only experiment with which is within the universe. Right? If you sit in your kitchen and experiment with ingredients in your kitchen, can you tell what's happening downtown, you know, on Wall Street? You know? Can you tell what's happening down, you know, in Sydney Opera House? You understand? It just is not going to work. So you're working in one area, that its limit is what's going on there. So it has to be understood, it's accepted. And the thing is if you accept it, you'll see that you find it's true. Right? If someone complains, oh, that's just your faith, but it's your faith that what the person, the scientist is saying is true also. You've seen it, you've done it. No, they just say they looked in a telescope and then they saw something. Who knows what's in there? You know, it's like they're looking at something and the cat's up at the top and peering in, you know, down this end. You know? Could be anything. Could be the guy was cleaning the roof and something dropped off onto the lens. Right? Or whatever it is. It's a bunch of gas and then they interpret it. You understand? It'd be like somebody burped and then they interpret everything from that. Literally, this is what they're doing. you know, it's educated guesses. You know, they've been doing this for 1,000 years, and so now they're getting a little bit more information. But the problem is I don't know if it was in your books, did you ever, when you were studying science and all these things in school, did you find that, did they ever say, before we thought like this, now we know? Yeah, they were saying that back when I went to school. Like that. You know what I'm saying? And since then, they've said that a meteor hit, the dinosaurs died, you know, all these kind of things, you like this. So, and then they say, oh no, but that's not there anymore. So that's the problem is that they're saying, no, this is absolute, how can you say these things? But at the same time, is the information they have keeps changing. And not only changing, it's not like, oh, they added something more to it. They just toss it out. That's the thing. It's just thrown out. And then the fun part is, when a quantum physicist was telling me, quantum throws something out as useless, chemistry picks it up as, wow, this is the latest thing, you know, like that. Or they throw something out and biology picks it up. It's like, you know, it's just, you know, right? You know, it's really chewing the chew here.
Regarding the absolute authority, like, we understand absolute authority should be accepted. One of the impediments comes like the past experience of ours. Like, we have put faith in the scientist and we not.
Do you have an alternative?
We don't have an alternative.
So then, why not give it a try? Here they're saying this works. Everybody says from the beginning page of Gita to the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita that this is the system. You have examples of people following it and attaining perfection. Right? That's why Purana is very important, because it gives us examples. If we don't want to accept it, that's our loss. But that doesn't change the absolute authority. It's not that because we believe in it, it exists. It's always existed. It always will. And then if we believe in it, then we'll get the benefit. And if we don't, we won't. You know what I'm saying? Just like you don't have faith that the buses actually go to where you're saying, because, you know, when your great grandmother grew up, then buses like that, you know, in Germany, it didn't work out so good. No? So therefore, you won't get on the bus because you don't have faith. It's not what it is. But everybody else is getting on the bus and they're fine. So you're the only one that'll lose. That you're the one that will lose out. No one else. That makes sense.
The problem comes from accepting a living authority. We have a
here. One thing in here. We have to let us understand the nature of this forum. Okay. So this forum is that we're discussing, and because we want everyone to understand, it has the option that, while we're speaking, in between you can ask questions, right? But what's expected is that something is stated. You're going to take that, analyze it, and only if you cannot understand it, then you ask a question exactly on the point you don't understand. But to just, that it's just, this is a one-on-one conversation, and we're just, the things that, the process of our intellectual analyzation of the reasoning as it goes on, we have to vocalize that as we're going through it. This is not the forum. It means literally, it's not the forum. It means you have some relevant point on this. Don't just what I said, say it again in your own words. You know? Or come up with some other thing that you had an uncle who was like this. So what? What has that got to do with everybody sitting here? So the point is you, what you don't understand, ask about that. Don't just, you have some things that are there, and hey, there was a word that was common with something over here, let's drag it out and go into it, because it's explained. Everybody in the room understands. And then we go, no but. Like that. You understand? Here the, literally the butts are for sitting on. You understand? Not for vocalizing. Does that make sense? So we have to catch this. Otherwise, we are going, means literally, we are going to make the rule that only those who are up to date on the Chaitanya Charitamrita in the discussions can ask questions. Literally. Right? So this is not just for you. This is for anybody who does like this. Use your brain. Right? I was most impressed with, I mean, only time I was in Prague. Right? So Prague's in Czech Republic. Czechs are bohemians. That's all they do is think. They probably use them as the prototype for those, the intellectuals in Dune, which were only a brain, you know, sitting inside this, you know, glass thing. Right? So you make a statement, and all they, you just see these blank faces all just sitting there. Right? You know, with their berets and their goatees and that. I mean, it's like right out of a textbook. And then, you know, like that, you know, any questions? And then they raise their hand. You know, you're surprised that they're even animate, right? You know? And then they ask a question that they've thought, okay, if that's this, this goes into this, and then if that scenario was that, that would become that. And then that was there, that's who come this. And they go, it's like six stages along. Then they come into, they hit a wall. And then they go, so what do you do here? They didn't argue over words. They didn't argue over a word that we've explained a million times on how it means, but we have the idea that stuck in our mind is the word means this, and so we're going to stick to that, and so we're going to argue over the meaning of the word, though it's been explained for the last 9 years. So none of that. That I was impressed with that. And that wasn't one guy. That was all of them. You know, four or five asked questions. It was like they took it and tried to do something with it. What can you do with it? And when they hit a wall, they ask a question. But in the process, they didn't like, oh wow, it's really happening in my head. Hey, cause everybody should listen to this. Please don't. Otherwise, we're going to get nowhere. You know, last term, we didn't have any of this. Right? And because we didn't have any of this, we'd go through a lot of information and had nice discussions. Now, we only get through one page. And this is the introduction. We haven't even gotten to the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And what are we discussing? Is it stuff that's on the Chaitanya Charitamrita level? No. Is it stuff on the 11th and 12th canto level? No. It's doubts that we've had before we even joined. And we're still, you know, flogging a dead horse. You know? So the point is we have to think. If something's been said, and then it will apply to what we're saying, take it. Don't just say, but it's not the exact words I'd use, so therefore is it this? Yes, you know, this. Okay. But no, but is it, you know? Just to be honest, this morning, in the morning classes, I almost walked out three times. I really had to control myself. I was ready to walk out three times because that's all that happened this morning. It was like a festival of people thinking out loud. And literally, you ask a relevant question that you can't understand. Not these ones, well, let's discuss it. This is not the forum for you to discuss it. This is the forum for you to hear, contemplate, and then ask so you can go further. Does that make sense? And it should be understood, this discussion is on the platform of you chastise the daughter to say something to the daughter-in-law. So don't think I'm talking about him. He is also being talked about, but we're talking, it's much broader. Like that. It has to be understood. Otherwise, we can't go anywhere. And you're having a great time, but the people who have been sitting here for the last 10, 12 years are freaking out. Because you can't get anywhere. It's they teach the first year, and they deal with this stuff. So this is the ninth year. We're not supposed to be dealing with this. Does this make sense?
Tenth year.
We finished 9 years. Yeah, ten years. Okay. You understand? So understand, this is what we're doing. So then try to understand it. Don't just go into this automatic thing that, you know, this modern kind of thing is whatever I feel, then that's the thing and that's the discussion. We're working with absolute truth here. We're not working about how I feel. Right? You know, the whole idea is Lord Chaitanya is showing you how you can feel in connection with transcendence. So all this we feel about this issue, this one, that one. No. Catch it from here. Prabhupada's showing how to talk to these people. You're wondering how to talk at the university. This is how you talk. Right? And they have arguments, then figure it out. It's not my business to work out the problem you had at the last university that you were at. We're giving you the things, the tools, you have to use them. Right? Is it a separate sense? Otherwise, it's just, it's getting to an impasse. Because, I mean, it's, I understand, okay, Tattva Sandarbha, we do one page. Okay, that makes sense. But Nectar Devotion, we only do one page? Because everybody has to discuss Sahajya from 200 different angles? You go to Radhika, is that guy Sahajya? Yes. What about that guy? He's wearing something different. Yes, he's also Sahajya. What about that guy over there? You know, what about this dog? No, he's not. You know, it's just, we can't do that. No, but I meant he was really nice. So what? He was really nice. Great. Does that make sense? Otherwise, the subtle points that we have here, we can't even get to because we've somehow or another been forced to just deal with these kind of issues, which for the last year we've so wondered, by Krishna's grace, so wonderfully haven't had to deal with. So we have to be able to not have to deal with issues all the time. Like that. You know, trying to understand the positive, the nice things. We're trying to get to that, but every time we go to that, then no, there's this word here, over here. You know, is there an I and we? You know? No, it's W and E. But you know, I'm also an individual and I'm within the grid like that, so there must be an I within we. No, that's the game box like that, you know, like that. No, this is just as the you know, the language thing. Does that make sense? So we have to be able to do it. So we welcome proper questions. It's about that. That's why the forum's like this. But we can't have it just to become something or just where everything goes. It's concluded. And just keep going. If this is a general question and answer, then perfect. We can do that all day. But it's not. We're trying to get through these elements here, right? Because the discussion's on sound, on shabda, like that. And we have issues like that, but everybody's got issues. That's why we're in the material world. Didn't you hear this morning that we're in the material world because we have authority issues? So then why bring it up now? So do we have authority? You know, what about if we have authority? We discussed that this morning. Does that make sense? You know, if it's an area we don't understand, like Mayavadis, right? Because we just have nothing to do with them. So when we discuss their philosophy, yeah, we don't know what Mayavadis are. So then we can get into, is it bifurcation, is it reflection, and this and that, and then is it real reflection, and or is it illusory reflection? That we can get into. Because nobody's discussing issues on that point. Right? So it works. You know? But as soon as we shift over Nectar Devotion, like we're talking Vaidhi Sadhana, no issues. When we get across the prema and go beyond, no issues. Only in Rag Bhakti, somehow or another, everybody's the Rag Bhakta. And so if you are, great, there'll be no issues. Does that make sense? Yeah. Yes. So Portnoy's had his complaint. So now we'll move on. Does that make sense? Yes. You're welcome to ask questions. Means we've been contemplating making this rule for the last, what?
10 years.
10 years. But we haven't. Because then it's calmed down. But if it started up, it was just like, you know, since yesterday, it's just like rife. You know?
It seems like resetting the system, like a computer.
Yeah, it's just like you reset every time. You can't get anywhere. So you're going to get into this fine point, and then bang, we're back at, you know, I'm a guy sitting in the university and this and that, and I didn't, my parents were this, and the other guys were that, and my professors were this, and so how are you going to deal with this? This guy, like, I'm not. I'll give you tools that you deal with it, but I'm not going to deal with it. Does that make sense? This is not a public shrink session.
Free.
Free. Like that. If you want it to be a shrink session, we get a clock. Right? Charged by the second. Then you can talk all you want. More questions? You've already racked up $357. You know anything more? Like that. Yeah. No. We're good. So we have to understand is that we have to first try ourselves. See, in other words, we're at the point where manana should be being applied. We should be seeing. Okay, we've heard it. We've heard this a million times. Is this the first time you've ever heard about Shabda and hearing from authority? No. Okay, so you've heard about it. So now the thing is there. What are in the application, what are doubts coming up from application? Not just doubts over words used or modern issues or things like that. We're beyond that. This is the postgraduate course. Technically for us in the school, it's the second postgraduate. This is the higher postgraduate. You know? It's actually the third level, right? Because masters, they count as postgraduate. So it's the third level of postgraduate. Right? So, therefore, we expect that thinking is going on. Does that make sense?
Good expectation.
Yes. It's a good expectation. Yes. So at this point we say, voila, and we're going on. Okay? Yes, okay. Sound is very important in Vedic understanding, for if it is pure, it is accepted as authoritative. Even in the material world, we accept a great deal of information sent thousands of miles by telephone or radio. In this way, we also accept sound as evidence in our daily lives. Although we cannot see the informant, we accept his information as valid on the basis of sound. Sound vibration, then, is very important in the transmission of Vedic knowledge. But the point is what Prabhupada is saying is here, you're not hearing directly. The person speaking there, you can't hear it. It's coming through whatever, you know, methods it's coming through. Like that. And so, coming through there, how do we know it's not, you know, played with or anything like that? But in any case, the point is we're not hearing directly. But we're hearing through, it's coming from them and coming through this line. And so then you're able to hear what that person has said, even though you can't actually directly hear them. So in this way, it's like the parampara. We're accepting that knowledge. Does that make sense? We take it as good as, right? So that's the point of the Vedic. We take it as good as. We're hearing here from Srila Prabhupada, as good as hearing from him, even though it's the written word. And when he quotes Gita, you know, Krishna said here, we're hearing from Krishna. So that's the point of the parampara. You hear from authority. Okay. And so it's as good as. That's the point, because we're doing it every day in our regular stuff, our day-to-day things. So why wouldn't it be, if this is a reflection, why wouldn't it be like that in the original? that makes sense. Yeah. When Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was living in Vrindavan, there were not very many temples. At that time, the three principal temples were those of Madan Mohan, Govindaji, and Gopinath. As a resident of Vrindavan, Krishnadas Kaviraj offers his respects to the deities in these temples and requests God's favor. Quote, "My progress in spiritual life is very slow, so I'm asking your help." End quote. In the 15th verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas offers his obeisances to the Madan Mohan Vigraha, the deity who can help us progress in Krishna consciousness. In the execution of Krishna consciousness, our first business is to know Krishna and our relationship with him. To know Krishna is to know oneself, and to know oneself is to know one's relationship with Krishna. Since this relationship can be learned by worshipping the Madan Mohan Vigraha, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami first establishes his relationship with him. Because self-realization means you know Krishna. We're part and parcel of Krishna. Without knowing Krishna, you can't know who we are. And to actually, factually know who we are means you have to know Krishna. Right? So that's the point. So this establishment of the relationship, that's Madan Mohan. So Madan Mohan, we see here, because there's three deities, Madan Mohan means that knowledge of this relationship, but also the attitude in the relationship. So it'll have both the elements of Sankarshan and Prajumna. Both will be there in Madan Mohan. Right? That makes sense. But as we see here, is that the emphasis that's being brought out here is that attraction to Krishna. Right? So that's it. When this is established, in the 16th verse, Krishnadas offers his obeisances to the functional deity, Govinda. Right? So that's what we're talking about, functional. We hear, then there should be some functioning. Right? The Govinda deity is called the functional deity because he shows us how to serve Radha and Krishna. The Madan Mohan deity simply establishes that I am your eternal servant. With Govinda, however, there's actual acceptance of service. Right? So that'll be the so Shravana Marana Nididhyasana. Right? Mm-hmm. Or Sambandha Abhideya and Prayatana.
What would be Gopinath would be the
Prayatana? Yes, he's the Prayatana.
And when we say Shravana Marana Nididhyasana, wouldn't it be Nididhyasana as Govinda too?
It's the realization, the value. The activity doesn't change, it's now you value it.
So when we hear, then we contemplate, and
yes,
then we act.
We act as part of contemplation. Manana means you're contemplating and acting. See, what happens is that some, you'll see, is, let's say, a common person acts, he doesn't contemplate. And the so-called intellectuals, then they contemplate, they don't act. That's why Prabhupada calls armchair speculators. And so that's why there's no, they don't advance in their personal maturity. Because you have to do both. Nididhyasana means you taking that knowledge that's there from Madan Mohan, and that attitude, that's what you apply in Govindaji. And then applying it, then you get realization. So that realization is that value of Krishna consciousness, that taste for Krishna consciousness. That's the prayojan. You know. But the point is since it's an ongoing thing, the name is the process, the name is the result. Because this is all Krishna. Right? And so for us, we're trying to catch that point of Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath. But as we see, is mentioned before, and will come up more, Krishna means he knows who he is, but he's wondering what is it about himself that Radharani sees, because it's Radha Madan Mohan, Radha Govinda, Radha Gopinath. So what is the attraction Radharani has? What is that, you know, being that? What is that drive in the service? What is the taste she's getting? So he comes and takes that. So then you have both of them together. Does that make sense? So it's unique because, I mean, so many may be worshipping, let's say, Govindaji. But, you know, Radharani's there, but it's about Govindaji. But Lord Chaitanya's bringing out is the attitude that Radharani has that makes it the Govindaji of Braj. Right? Does that make sense? Otherwise, people from Vaikuntha could get great advantage by going and worshiping Govindaji. Mm-hmm. But it's a different mood. It's a different mood. Mm-hmm. In the spiritual world of Vrindavan, the buildings are made of touchstone. The cows are known as Surabhi cows, givers of abundant milk. And the trees are known as wish-fulfilling trees, for they yield whatever one desires. In Vrindavan, Krishna herds the Surabhi cows, and he is worshipped by hundreds and thousands of gopis, cowherd girls, who are all goddesses of fortune. When Krishna descends to the material world, the same Vrindavan descends with him, just as an entourage accompanies an important personage. Because when Krishna comes, his land also comes. Vrindavan is considered to extend beyond the material world. Therefore, devotees take shelter of the Vrindavan in India, for it is considered to be a replica of the original Vrindavan. Although one may complain that no Kalpa Vriksha wish-fulfilling trees exist there, when the Goswamis were there, Kalpa Vriksha trees were present. It is not that one can simply go to such a tree and make demands. One must first become a devotee. Right? Because otherwise, why did they have, just because you said, doesn't mean, you know, the kid comes up to the mom and says, I want a cookie. It's kind of like, what did you do to deserve a cookie? You know, so become a devotee, right? So, you know, this is the aphorism of the Kalpa Vriksha trees. First take up devotional service, then we'll talk, right? Yeah? Okay. The Goswamis would live under a tree for one night only, and the trees would satisfy all their desires. For the common man, this may all seem very wonderful, but as one makes progress in devotional service, all this can be realized. Because that's the point. It can be realized. With mundane logic, it doesn't make any sense. But it doesn't mean that one won't realize it, and that the intellect won't be satisfied. It's just you can't use mundane intellectual methods to understand it. They're the wrong tools. Devotion's the tool. From that, all the other aspects are taken care of. So that faith, that's then what's important. Vrindavan is actually experienced as it is by persons who have stopped trying to derive pleasure from material enjoyment. Right? So if you're trying to get material enjoyment, how you'll appreciate the spiritual enjoyment? Right? If you're eating one thing, you can't taste something else. So when one gives up the endeavor for material enjoyment, that's when then one can appreciate the transcendental. Quote, when will my mind become cleansed of all hankering for material enjoyment, so I will be able to see Vrindavan? One great devotee asks, the more Krishna conscious we become, and the more we advance, the more everything is revealed as spiritual. Right? So Prabhupada mentioned before in the Bhagavatam that for the pure devotees, they actually don't see the material world as we see it. They're actually seeing everything in connection to Krishna. So they're actually living in the spiritual world. That's why it said wherever they are, that's Vrindavan. Right? It doesn't matter the place. Because they're seeing it that way, that's the effect. Because it all is Krishna. The mundane is just our lack of being able to see it connected to Krishna. It doesn't mean it's not inferior. It's temporary. It's made of unconscious matter, but it's still Krishna's unconscious matter. It's still working according to Krishna's direction. So it has a connection to Krishna. Why wouldn't it be spiritual? But if we try to use it separate from Krishna, the effect it gives is not spiritual. But if you use it in connection with Krishna, it gives spiritual. That's Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya doesn't mean I'm using something modern. Yukta Vairagya means you see it connected to Krishna. That's Yukta Vairagya. Because Yukta means connected to Krishna. It doesn't mean technology. And Vairagya means it's not about you, I've given up material enjoyment. Therefore, it's about pleasing Krishna. Therefore, it's vairagya, or detachment. How does technology fit into that word? You know what I'm saying? That's it means everything. Your body, that's still Yukta Vairagya, because it's not you. So you're engaging in Krishna service. So everything. So that also includes the technology that's around us. But it's not exclusively technology or exclusively something that's not Vedic. The point is everything's connected to Krishna. That's Yukta Vairagya. Yes, so that's why we see he offers his respects first to Madan Mohan. Because then we can understand the knowledge and the attitude. Because that's the whole thing, devotional service, it's an attitude. Like that faith, that this is how it is. That attitude, that unflinching faith, that then Krishna reveals everything. You know, said the first, that verse, the one who has unflinching faith in the spiritual master. Yes, then everything's revealed. That's what it says. It doesn't say that I'm super intelligent and I analyze things and, you know, or I use a Ouija board or, you know, whatever it is. It says that tarot card, you know. No, it's because you have faith. Thus, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami considered the Vrindavan in India to be as good as the Vrindavan in the spiritual sky. And in the 16th verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he describes Radharani and Krishna seated beneath a wish-fulfilling tree in Vrindavan, on a throne decorated with valuable jewels. There, Krishna's dear gopi friends serve Radha and Krishna by singing, dancing, offering betel nuts and refreshments, and decorating their lordships with flowers. Even today, yeah. So this non-difference, that's the reality. It's just a matter of whether it's prakat or aprakat. But the point is it's Vrindavan, all those things are going on. There's just certain times when it's manifest where everybody can see, and then there's times where it's not, but it's still the same place. Even today in India, people decorate swinging thrones and recreate this scene during the month of July, August. Right, so that Julan scene, like that, that's the scene of Govindaji. Right? Yeah. Generally, at that time, people go to Vrindavan to offer their respects to the deities there. Right. Finally, Krishnadas Goswami offers his blessings to his readers in the name of the Gopinath deity, who is Krishna as master and proprietor of the gopis. When Krishna played upon his flute, all the gopis, the cowherd girls, were attracted by the sound and left their household duties. And when they came to him, he danced with them. These activities are all described in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. These gopis were childhood friends of Krishna, and many were married. For in India, the girls were generally married by the age of 12. The boys, however, are not married before 18. So Krishna, who was 15 or 16 at the time, was not married. Nonetheless, he called these girls from their homes and invited them to dance with him. That dance is called the Rasa dance, and it is the most elevated of all the Vrindavan pastimes. Krishna is therefore called Gopinath because he is the beloved master of the gopis. Right, so when we're saying this, it's an attitude, because the other one said they're attracted, they're performing the Rasa dance, so we could say, oh, but that's Madan Mohan, or that's Govinda, but it's the attitude where Krishna is all in all to them. Yes. And his desire is all they're interested in taking part in. How to fulfill Krishna's desire. That's Gopinath. Hmm? Does that make sense? Yes. So, having that attraction to Krishna, having that interest to serve Krishna, having that interest to please Krishna, these are the deities. Yes. Hmm? Does that make sense? Hmm?
Yeah. As we see that the deities, they represent different moods of devotion or stages of devotion. Mm. And we see that Lord Chaitanya, he worshipped Jagannath in Puri. So Lord Jagannath has all these aspects together. Is there any...
See, this will come up later, but Sri Kshetra, then... You have the aspect that's now what's happening in Vrindavan. Vrindavan, you have the parakeya, means that they're not actually technically supposed to be together, but they are. So then to enhance that, because, okay, Radharani's married, or this or that, or they're not, or something. So then they're together. But then, unless there's other groups, then it doesn't actually, because then you can say, oh, no, but, you know, we're always with him. Right? So you see in the Leela that it keeps changing the timing so that different devotees are with him at different times. So that no one can say, oh, no, I'm with him all the time. You know, and they don't go to each other's pastimes. Right? But, and so then you have that aspect, and then the aspect of the different groups of the gopis and all that. But now, so you brought it to that point where there's, you're with Krishna sometimes, sometimes not. And then that you know, every moment's, one's with Krishna, it's one, you know, it has that element of sambhoga, being together. And when every moment the one's not, then it has that part. But, so that's now, that's when you're with Krishna, you're with, and when you're not, you're not. Okay? So in simple terminology, Dwarka is where you're with Krishna, but you're not. You understand? So even though you're with him, it is still separation. Because this is Dwarka Krishna. It's Krishna Vrindavan, but because of the environment, you're with the Dwarka Vasis, therefore the environment is Dwarka, not Vrindavan. So that's why you see is then there's that prayer of going back to Vrindavan. You know, that'll come up, you know, Madhya Leela. You know? So that's the whole Rath Yatra festival, is taking Krishna back to Vrindavan. Because then, you know, the Sambhog Vipralama happens, and it's you know, in its, yeah, you know, in its Vrindavan form. But then Purushottam Kshetra, then it's more intense because you're with Krishna and can't be with him. Because if you're not with him, it's obvious you can't talk. And then when you're with, you should be able to talk. But if you're with and you can't talk, that's even more intense. That's Puri. Even though someone says, oh, it's Dwarka, it's this and that. No, it's Kurukshetra. Purushottam Kshetra is Kurukshetra. Dwarka is Dwarka. That makes sense? So that's why you see is that these aspects are there. That makes sense? That's why many times you see the Acharyas, even though they've spent their time in Vrindavan, they'll come down here. Or they'll go to Puri. Just because the intensity gets greater. So. Krishnas Kaviraj petitions. Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami petitions the blessings of Lord Gopinath. May that Gopinath, the master of the gopis, Krishna, bless you. May you become blessed by Gopinath. The author of Chaitanya Charitamrita prays that just as Krishna attracted the gopis by the sweet sound of his flute, he will also attract the reader's mind by that transcendental vibration. So then with the blessings of... Okay, chapter 1, the spiritual masters, Pratigya. The relationship of a disciple with his spiritual master is as good as his relationship with the Supreme Lord. That's a very important part, because before we were talking about this transparent via media, it's very important to understand that. The devotees don't get in your way of a relationship with Krishna. Right? So that's why servant of the servant of the servant, it doesn't matter how many times, but Lord Chaitanya said 1,000 times removed, it doesn't matter. You're still just as directly connecting with Krishna in this position. Because we have to remember, let's say somebody's at the front of a group talking to somebody, and there's a whole huge crowd, hundreds of people, and you're at the back. Does that person know you're there? the celebrity? No. But is Krishna just any old celebrity? No. Like that. So he knows, because the point is you're serving the serving like this. Krishna understands the whole thing. He's appreciating the devotion of that whole line. So that's why it doesn't matter where you're, there is no time or space. So it's important to appreciate that the relationship with the disciple, with the spiritual master, is good as a relationship with the Supreme Lord, because they're representing the Lord. It means you get to practice the things of serving Krishna by that service to the spiritual master. Is that what I'm saying? Like that. That's right. Adhyaya Prakashita. In the first chapter. Okay. I offer obeisances to the spiritual master. For this is the beginning of auspicious writing. Mangalacharan, Chaitanya Charitamrita 17.313. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is none other than the combined form of Sri Radha and Krishna. He is the life of those devotees who strictly follow in the footsteps of Srila Rupa Goswami. Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Sanatana Goswami are the two principal followers of Srila Sarup Damodar Goswami, who acted as the most confidential servitor of Lord Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, known as Vishrambar in his early life. A direct disciple of Srila Rupa Goswami was Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. The author of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, stands as the direct disciple of Srila Rupa Goswami and Srila Raghunath Das Goswami. So this is how we're hearing. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, by the looks of it, he didn't meet Lord Chaitanya. He just met the devotees who had met. But his work is the most authoritative work on Lord Chaitanya. Like that. The direct disciple of Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was Srila Narottam Das Thakur, who accepted Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti as his servitor. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur accepted Srila Jagannath Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who in turn accepted Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, the spiritual master of Om Vishnupad Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, the divine master of our humble self. So here he's saying the direct disciple, and who accepted this, but in here there's gaps. Right? So, what are we talking here? Siksha. We're talking siksha. You understand? So, this concept of that it has to be diksha is the connection. That's an external form. That's the Goswami line. It's an apasampradaya, just for understanding's sake. So it's not an actual, it means you do have the diksha line. All of these spiritual masters that are mentioned here all have diksha gurus that all go back properly in the sampradaya. But the point is the siksha is the main thing. And so therefore here, then that connection through the siksha, that's what makes the parampara here. Right? So we're a siksha pranali. So it's actually more important. And you'll always come across the diksha pranali wallahs will always complain this, that, and all these things. But they're coming in the Goswami lines. Again, apasampradaya. But, very close, very similar. The main point is that's their point of its birth. Other things, the philosophy is generally the same. It's just they have this whole thing on birth. Something like this. So therefore, when you have a distance between siksha, yes, Srila Prabhupada can accept anybody who's a sincere follower of his instructions as his siksha disciple. But to try to make it diksha, that nobody does. No sampradaya does. No one anywhere does. But some will say, oh, but Prabhupada is transcendent, he can do whatever he likes. Yes, but they don't. Because they're acharya. They never just do whatever they like. Does that make sense? They do what the acharyas have done. That's the whole point. So they're always following in that way. Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's why the relationship is as good as the relationship with the Supreme Lord. Since we belong to this chain of specific succession from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, This edition of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita will contain nothing newly manufactured by our tiny brains, but only remnants of food originally eaten by the Lord Himself. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu does not belong to the mundane plane of the three qualitative modes. He belongs to the transcendental plane beyond the reach of the imperfect sense perception of a living being. Even the most erudite mundane scholar cannot approach the transcendental plane unless he submits himself to the transcendental sound with a receptive mood, for in that mood only can one realize the message of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if we go by our academic thing, we will not understand. And even if we've taken up devotional service, if we fall back on this, we still won't understand. Right? Those areas that you do fine, but anything that you're just applying your mundane eruditeness to, you won't understand. It's that simple. So that's why we just accept the remnants given by the acharyas. Then we understand. So it becomes very simple. Right? So that's why we're saying, remember Prabhupada saying, I think in the preface, that Lord Chaitanya, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, starts from this point of Sarva Dharma Parityaja. It starts from there, that you've surrendered to Krishna, now we'll talk. Now we'll reveal all these things. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. How do we practice this? How do we apply this in our life? How do we do this? You understand? That was the discussion before. This is the platform of questions. Then it's actually beneficial. Does that make sense? Yeah. What will be described herein, therefore, has nothing to do with the experimental thoughts created by the speculative habits of inert minds. So flowery, right? So poetic, right? The subject matter of this book is not a mental concoction, but a factual spiritual experience that one can realize only by accepting the line of succession described above. Right? Yes.
So, by mentioning all the Tatpariya Lingas
here? Oh. Okay. Yeah. He's mentioning all the Tatpariya Lingas. You know, he's mentioned the Mangalacharan, he's mentioned the conclusion, the attitude, the what specialness, the uniqueness, the, all these different things. Yeah. Any deviation from that line will bewilder the reader's understanding of the mystery of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is a transcendental literature meant for the postgraduate study of one who has realized all the Vedic literatures, such as the Upanishads, the Vedanta Sutra. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's why we're studying. We're saying, why are we studying this? So you can study Chaitanya Charitamrita. And their natural commentaries, such as Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita. This edition of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is presented for the study of sincere scholars who are really seeking the absolute truth. Right? So this aspect of sincere, so it's basically scholars. We expect it's not that, oh, it's just blind faith, right? We had that one, when did that? That just not long ago that came. Oh no, that wasn't here. Where was that? It was somewhere where they just, it's just a matter of if you can't speculate, then it's blind faith. Like that. Yeah. So, this whole point is that sincere scholars, they'll be able to appreciate it. And scholar means that you're willing to analyze it according to how it's given by the acharyas. Like that. And so then, that sincerity is important. Right? It is not the arrogant scholarship of a mental speculator, but a sincere effort to serve the order of a superior authority, whose service is the life and soul of this humble effort. It does not deviate even slightly from the revealed scriptures, and therefore anyone who follows in the disciplic line will be able to realize the essence of this book simply by the method of oral reception. Just by hearing, we'll be able to appreciate it. The first chapter of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita begins with 14 Sanskrit verses that describe the absolute truth. Then the next three Sanskrit verses describe the principal deities of Vrindavan. Namely, Sri Radha Madan Mohan, Sri Radha Govinda Deva, and Sri Radha Gopinathji. The first of the 14 verses is a symbolic representation of the Supreme Truth. And the entire first chapter is in actuality devoted to this single verse, which describes Lord Chaitanya in his six different transcendental expansions. The first manifestation described is the spiritual master, who appears in two plenary parts, called the initiating spiritual master and the instructing spiritual master. They are identical because both of them are phenomenal manifestations of the Supreme Truth. Next described are the devotees, who are divided into two classes, namely the apprentices and the graduates. Next are the incarnations, avatars of the Lord, who are explained to be non-different from the Lord. These incarnations are considered in three divisions. Incarnations of the potency of the Lord, incarnation of his qualities, and incarnations of his authority. In this connection, Lord Sri Krishna's direct manifestations and his manifestations for transcendental pastimes are discussed. Next considered are the potencies of the Lord, of which three principal manifestations are described. The consorts in the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, the queens of Dwarka Dham, and the highest of all, the damsels of Braja Dham. Finally, there is the Supreme Lord himself, who is the fountainhead of all these manifestations. Lord Sri Krishna and his plenary expansions are all in the category of the Lord himself, the energetic absolute truth, whereas his devotees, his eternal associates, are his energies. The energy and energetic are fundamentally one, but since their functions are differently exhibited, they are simultaneously different also. Right, they're one in that they're all, because Krishna's non-dual, but at the same time the functions are different, therefore they're individually different. So it shows, like all the things inside that a particular room we call the kitchen. It is all connected with cooking, but at the same time, because the functions are different, they have different names and different activities. So it's all one. It just cooks, but at the same time it's all different because they do different functions within the cooking process. So,
Prabhupada at another place explains this concept through the medium of Shakti and Shaktiman.
Shakti and Shaktiman, yes.
That explains.
Yes. Thus, the absolute truth is manifested in diversity in one unit. Right? It's one unit with diversity. Yeah. This philosophical truth, which is pursuant Vedanta Sutra, is called Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva, or the conception of simultaneous oneness and difference. In the latter portion of this chapter, the transcendental position of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and that of Srila Nityananda Prabhu are described with reference to the above theistic fact. Right? So, Prabhupada's giving an overview of what's happening in this chapter. You have the greater, but then what's specifically happening here and how it's going on. So Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is going to give his Mangalacharan, which is quite big. Then he's going to explain that Mangalacharan. So basically, the first so many chapters of Chaitanya Charitamrita are simply an explanation of the Mangalacharan. So they're all the opening of the book.
12 chapters.
Then after that starts his pastime. So then you can say, okay, now starts the pastimes of the Lord. But before that was the whole explanation. Does that make sense? And that explanation is then all also seen in the conclusion, as we said also, about the Tatparya Lingas, is that the Shikshastika and that understanding, that with the, the Mangalacharan, that's how you understand the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. His life and precepts.
In any 3 years, the introduction, after the Adhyaya Prakashita, because he is in order to prepare ourselves.
Yes, yes. So appreciate, because otherwise we don't actually understand the nature of Lord Nityananda. We don't understand the nature of Advaitacharya, if we don't understand his internal potencies, the devotees, the different kinds of incarnations, you know, because it mentioned here we have these are in three divisions, the incarnation of the potency of the Lord, incarnations of his qualities, and incarnations of his authority. So sometimes you see he's establishing his authority, sometimes he's the various potencies and all that, and other times you see his various qualities are coming out. Yes. So these different, like how you say, incarnation of the potency, the Shakti Avesh. And they're, you know, it's like Prithu is a management. He's the management wala. Right? You know, so then from that, if you want to know management, then learn from him. Like that. You know, so the first thing he's doing when he's coming in is he's able to deal with everyone according to their nature. That's the first thing he does. You know, they churned him from the thighs of Vena, and then him and his wife appear, and after the sages offer prayers and all these things, then he goes to the city to take up, managing. So when he comes into the city, and he meets that, he sees everybody, and each and according to their nature and their position and everything, he understands all that, he interacts with them. That's a manager, not because he's so big he just walks by everybody because he has no time. That's not a manager. Like that. Mm-hmm. That's someone who can manage insentient things. So they should stick to insentient things, because if you know, because the sentient things don't like that. So that's the first thing you see him do. And when the Prabhupada says, you should know Krishna conscious and you should understand Varnashram so that you can understand how every devotee, their nature, they can be engaged. So it's also after being Krishna conscious, the first point in practical management Prabhupada makes about management. And Prithumars is the incarnation of Krishna's administrative ability. So that's why these things are there. We can learn from them. Okay. Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 19. Invocation verses. Verses 20 to 31. Summary of invocation verses. Verses 32 to 82. Commentary on verse 1. Because it's going to go, 12 chapters to explain 17.
Three levels of many places we see this how the acharyas go. The three levels. First they give in one verse what do they want to say, then yes. Explain in few, then explain in a bigger one.
Right. Yes, yes. Like you see is that in Nectar Devotion. In one chapter, the sixth chapter, then he explains the whole 64 items of devotional service. Mm-hmm. Right? But then he spends so many chapters explaining that, right? So that's exactly how it works. Sometimes people get bewildered in that because they see one verse says everything, and then after that they'll give a little bit more explanation, so that means something, and then they'll give the full. So even seeing the logic, it's like that. You have the thesis, then you have the reasoning, then you have the explanation. So it always has these things. Then 83 to 110. Bhagavatam, Gita, it's all, 30 verses generally is the maximum, even less, good, but, Chaitanya Charitamrita, then, Nectar Devotion, we're already on 200 and something, and we're still,
296.
Got plenty of, distance to go, right? Then, so that's it on chapter 1. Okay, so he comments on the, he gives the invocation, gives a general commentary, and then he gives a full commentary on verse 1 and 2, and that finishes chapter 1. Okay. Verses 1 to 19, invocation verses. Okay. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the spiritual masters, the devotees of the Lord, the Lord's incarnations, his plenary portions, his energies, and the primeval Lord himself, Sri Krishna Chaitanya. So we've done Krishna in five features, but the point is he's the original guru, but then you have the spiritual master. Right? So that's, as Prabhupada pointed out, the sixth feature. And so when you do deity worship, you're going to worship Lord Chaitanya, but first you have to worship the spiritual masters. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Gaudiya to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. Right? Because the sun and the moon, sun has, you know, certain qualities that are special, and the moon has particular qualities. But they never, because it's a full moon, right? They never rise at the same time. In fact, when the sun rises, the full moon sets. Exactly, they're 180 degrees. So here, this is special because Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, the sun and moon, have risen simultaneously. So you're getting the full benefits of both the sun and moon at the same time. So that's special. What the Upanishads describe as the impersonal Brahman is but the effulgence of his body. And the Lord known as the Supersoul is but his localized plenary portion. Yeah, because localized means it's for a particular place, and localized means he's just dealing with that place. Right? And so then we don't necessarily see the personal aspect. Mm-hmm. Means Kiradakshai Vishnu, there's only one Supersoul, there's Kiradakshai Vishnu. And he's expanded into everybody's heart, but it's the same one Supersoul. But Kiradakshai Vishnu is with his associates in that in Swetabhi. But as Paramatma, then we don't see that. Just like Garbhodakshai Vishnu is with his associates, but then is the universal form and pervading the universe like that, then we don't see that personal aspect. Does that make sense? So therefore you get the Brahman aspect, you get the Paramatma aspect. Right? Because they're both all-pervading at the same time as they're also dealing with the aspects of, you know, guiding each living entity. Okay? Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna himself, full with six opulences. He is the absolute truth, and no other truth is greater than or equal to him. May the Supreme Lord, who is known as the son of Srimati Sachi Devi, be transcendentally situated in the innermost chambers of your heart. Resplendent with the radiance of molten gold, he has appeared in the age of Kali, by his causeless mercy, to bestow what no incarnation has ever offered before, the most sublime and radiant mellow of devotional service, the mellow of conjugal love. Footnote 3. Verse 4 is a quotation from the Vidagdha Madhava 1-2, a drama compiled and edited by Srila Rupa Goswami. The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations. Great, because he's heard from, he said, from Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami. So naturally that mood, the flavor, then is what you'll see in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So that's why it's so special, so unique. The loving affairs of Sri Radha and Krishna are transcendental manifestations of the Lord's internal pleasure-giving potency. Although Radha and Krishna are one in their identity, they separate themselves eternally. Now these two transcendental identities have again united in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya. I bow down to him who has manifested himself with the sentiment and complexion of Srimati Radharani, although he is Krishna himself. Footnote 4. Verse 5 is a quotation from the diary of Srila Sarup Damodar. Desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities in him that she alone relishes through her love, and the happiness she feels when she realizes the sweetness of his love, the Supreme Lord, Hari, richly endowed with her emotions, appeared from the womb of Srimati Sachi Devi as the moon appeared from the ocean. Footnote 5. Verse 6 is also a quotation from the diary of Srila Swarup Damodar.
Right. Swarup Damodar gives the diary to Raghunath Das Goswami, and he, like, because Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is one of the foremost students, he shares it with him.
Then he gets it from whom? Yeah, so it's all coming. That's the thing, that's why it's so nice, because it's taken from all. It also mentions that, you know, taking from Chaitanya Bhagavat, the Manga, all the different things like that, then it's put together. But as Bhaktivinoda Thakur points out, is even though he's taken from these others, Chaitanya Charitamrita is considered the most authoritative, because it's about the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya. While the others tell the pastimes and wonderful interactions, but the nature of Lord Chaitanya and why all this is going on, so that you can understand, that's Chaitanya Charitamrita. So to have an entrance, that's more authoritative. Because right? Otherwise, the associates can appreciate, but we can appreciate because of Chaitanya Charitamrita.
And we also say it has all the three aspects of Chaitanya, Vishvambar and Gaura.
Yes.
And focusing only on Vishvambar, which is our movement as such.
Yes. Yes, so nourishing the devotees, that is it. But it's here, is that, what is it? Okay, desiring to understand the glory of Radharani's love, the wonderful qualities of Radharani's love. So it means just the position. What is that mood of hers that she has, right? That sti bhava, like that. The wonderful qualities in him. So that's Govindaji. He's about the qualities. So one is the attraction qualities, and the happiness she feels. So that's the aspect of Govindaji. So these three are what he comes to taste. But because it's talking about, it's Gopinath and the Lord of the Gopis, this is all happening within that context. And so these give rise to everything, and we see the Sankirtan mission comes from all this. May Sri Nityananda Rama be the object of my constant remembrance. Sankarsana, Seshanaga, and the Vishnus who lie on the Karana ocean, Garbha ocean, and ocean of milk, are his plenary portions, and the portions of his plenary portions. I surrender unto the lotus feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, who is known as Sankarsana in the midst of the Chakravyuha, consisting of Vasudeva, Sankarsan, Prajumna, and Aniruddha. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha. Right? So, all those discussions on the four of them, and that, so much technical things and this and that, and now one can appreciate. See, the whole point is all the technical stuff we learned. Now you can appreciate it here in its sweetness. He possesses full opulences and resides in Vaikuntha Loka, far beyond the material creation. Footnote 6. Verses 7 and 8 are quotations from the diary of Srila Swarup Damodar. I offer my full obeisances under the feet of Sri Nityananda Rama, whose partial representation, called Karana Dakshay Vishnu, lying on the Karana ocean, is the original Purusha, the master of the illusory energy, and the shelter of all the universes. I offer my full obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, a partial part of whom is Garbha Dakshay Vishnu. From the navel of Garbha Dakshay Vishnu sprouts the lotus that is the birthplace of Brahma, the engineer of the universe. The stem of that lotus is the resting place of the multitude of planets. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the feet of Sri Nityananda Ram, whose secondary part is the Vishnu lying on the ocean of milk. That Kiradakshay Vishnu is the supersoul of all living entities and the maintainer of all the universes. Seshanaga is his further subpart. Right, so that's why you see is all these go together with Lord Nityananda. So you don't have to technically separate. Generally, when we're talking about is that flavor of Krishna, then that's in its own position. But then when you're dealing with the Kriya and Jnana Shaktis, that's everything else. So that's Nityananda. Here's Lord Balaram. He's everything else. And so that's why you can say Sesha, you can say Karana Dakshay Vishnu, you can say Sankarsana, all these, and it's not that you can say, oh, it's changing the flavor. For him, it's not changing the flavor, because the mood that they have of serving Vasudeva is the same. That's why he's the Supreme Personality of Servitor Godhead. So in all these, they're all serving. And then you see Sesha, he's again serving. right? But he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's why you see whenever there's verses about Lord Nityananda or Balaram, you'll see all the positions are always mentioned in one verse. You know? They're all together because he's doing all of that. That's why then Krishna can just enjoy with Radharani. Balaram takes care of everything else. But, Lord Advaitacharya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Because he is non-different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita. And because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, I take shelter of him. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord, Krishna, who is non-different from his features as a devotee. Devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. So, we see every time that they explain the Panchatattva, you see there's a slight difference. Because if everything's there, and this means all these aspects are there. So, you can bring out. So here's the devotee, devotee incarnation, devotional manifestation. So Lord Chaitanya is the devotee, devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. Okay. Glory to...
That's an order.
Pure devotee, because generally you'll see Srivas and that this always is always reversed. Right?
Yeah.
Like that. Most of the time it's not understood, so devotees get caught up at that one. They get everything else right, and then there they get it. Right? Okay. Glory to the all-merciful Radha and Madan Mohan. I am lame and ill-advised, yet they are my directors, and their lotus feet are everything to me. In a temple of jewels, in the Vrindavan, underneath a desire tree, Sri Sri Radha Govinda, served by their most confidential associates, sit upon an effulgent throne. I offer my humble obeisances unto them. And so here is Madan Mohan. I am lame and ill-advised. So lame means I don't know how to do things properly. Ill-advised means I'm indirect. It's not that I'm so qualified, I'm so well-informed. You know, we don't know. I offer my humble obeisances unto them. Sri Srila Gopinath, who originated the transcendental mellow of the rasa dance, stands on the shore in Vamsivata and attracts the attention of the cowherd damsels with the sound of his celebrated flute. May they all confer upon us their benediction. Glory to Sri Chaitanya Nityananda. Glory to Advaita Chandra. All glory to the devotees of Sri Gaura, Lord Chaitanya. These three deities of Vrindavan, Madan Mohan, Govinda, and Gopinath, have absorbed the heart and soul of the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, followers of Lord Chaitanya. I worship their lotus feet, for they are the lords of my heart. Right, so that finishes the Mangalacharya. Right, and now we start A. Is that just St. Prabhupada's purport? Okay, yes. Yeah. So, yes. And so then there'll be some explanation on this, and then we're going to start getting into, you know, then what is going to be dealt with. Okay. That's good. Anything else? No? So we'll end here. And then tomorrow we'll continue with Srila Prabhupada's purport.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.